We're doing the book of Shmuel. We're up to what's commonly known as Shmuel Bet, the first chapter. We discussed this is not a Jewish invention, dividing the book of Shmuel into Aleph and Beis. We were up to David the Melech's eulogy. When David hears that the king Shaul, King Saul, and his son Yonatan, Jonathan, have been killed in battle, so David laments. He says a tremendous and world-famous eulogy. Remember, he is eulogizing the first king of Israel, who also happens to be his father-in-law, who happens to have been pursuing him the last few years, trying to kill him. And he begins by saying, we now have to start teaching the tribe of Judea, the tribe of Yehuda, to learn to use the bow and arrow, the strength of the tribe of Benjamin. King Saul and Yonatan came from the tribe of Benjamin, and they were magnificent at shooting slingshot and bows and arrows. And so he says, now we have to teach the tribe of Yehuda to do that. Now that we lost such powerful warriors. Hatzvi Israel, he says, the beauty of Israel, their strength, how could it be that on the top of their albamotecha, when they had the uphill advantage, they fell? The truth is that they shouldn't have fallen. They were brave warriors. They had the upper hand, and they did fall. Ech naflu giborim? How could it be that such brave warriors fell over there? And so he says, don't let it be known throughout the Philistine territories, so that the Philistine girls won't rejoice over his death. Shaul was always there for the Jewish girls. When Jewish girls would be going to get married and they didn't have a dowry, they had no one to take care of them, Shaul would use his wealth to help them out. That's the king of Israel. He uses his wealth for the people. He has time for the poorest of the poor. So when the poor girls had nothing to take to their wedding, Shaul would take care of them. And he says, in contradistinction, let it not be known throughout the Philistine territories, lest the Philistine girls rejoice over his downfall. And our sages say that this pasuk teaches us an attitude, that we try to keep our troubles inside. We try not to make it known. We don't publish ads in the New York Times. If there's a problem here within our people, we keep it within our people. We say, don't let the Philistines rejoice over our downfall. We try to keep our dirty laundry inside. And that concept, our sages attributed to this pasuk. Rav Pesin Zatzal used to quote this pasuk all the time. Al tagidu begat. He used to say, if there are problems, we have to deal with them, but we don't have to publicize them. It's no one's business. And on the contrary, if we make it known, we have to realize we're risking a chilul Hashem, the desecration of Hashem's name. We do represent His name. When King David is lamenting their downfall, so he says in poetic form, you mountains of Gilboa, where Shaul was and his son Yonatan were taken down, no dew or rain should fall down on you. You shouldn't bear fruits, they shouldn't take from you truma, even the gifts to Hashem should be prevented from you, because Shaul's shield was found dry there. They used to oint their shields with oil so that the spears and the arrows would slide off of them. And he describes it as though King Saul's shield went dry, that the arrows pierced it and that they were able to knock him down. He says, Yonatan, your bow never retreated. Shaul, your sword never came back empty. You two were tremendous warriors. You were beloved in your life, and in your death you have not left us. Swifter than eagles, braver than lions. And these lines, this pasuk is often quoted about those that passed. Hane'avim ve'ni'imim b'chayehem uv'motam lo nifradu. How beloved and pleasant in their life, and even in their death they haven't left us. Minisharim kalu, more swifter than eagles. Me'arayot gaveru, more brave than lions. David laments his brother-in-law, Yonatan. He says, I weep over you, my brother, Jonathan. I loved you a lot, more than the love of women. How have such great warriors fallen? David concludes his lamentation. And now we've lost weapons. He refers to Shaul and Yonatan as though they were the secret weapon of the Jewish people. Now, if he was the secret weapon of the Jewish people, if there was one warrior who stood up for the Jewish people, it was David. But we pointed out earlier that Shaul was no small fry himself. Shaul was a tremendous warrior. Often that gets forgotten in the big picture, but the truth is he was, and that's what David says. That Shaul's sword, once he took it out, it didn't come back without taking people down. So now that he's properly lamented Shaul, and he's eulogized him, so David asks Hashem, should I ascend through one of the cities of Judea? And Hashem says, yes. And David asks Hashem, where? And Hashem says, in Hebron. And here we see that David's ascent to power is going to be in Hebron. Hebron is the source of the Davidic dynasty. That's where it all begins. And Hebron is also the merits of the patriarchs. So David goes with his two wives, Achinoam Israelite and Avigail, and he takes his men with him, and he's in Hebron. So he's in Hebron among his family, among his tribe, among Yehuda, and the people of Judea come and anoint him as king. And David gets word that the people of Yavesh Gilad, they buried Shaul. Now you remember the people of Yavesh Gilad risked their lives for Shaul. Remember that Shaul's first military achievement was protecting the people of Yavesh Gilad. And we recalled that really the history of Yavesh Gilad goes a little bit back further, because when the rest of Israel was fighting civil war against the tribe of Benjamin, and they killed out all of the tribe of Benjamin other than 600 men, among who was Shaul, so the people of Yavesh Gilad, they didn't partake in that. They didn't partake in that civil war. And then they were wiped out. The rest of Israel turned on them. They said, if you didn't join our war against Benjamin, that means you sided with them. And they went to annihilate the people of Yavesh Gilad, and they took their daughters and gave them to the tribe of Binyamin as wives. And it could be that Shaul's own wife came from there. I don't know. And then when Shaul becomes king, so he comes to the protection of whoever was living there by Yavesh Gilad. And then when Shaul dies, so the people of Yavesh Gilad risk their lives to bring his body back and bury him. And David sends word to them, and he says to them, blessed are you to Hashem that you did such kindness with your master Shaul and you buried him. And now Hashem should do kindness and truth, and I will also do kindness for what you've done. Strengthen your hands and be brave soldiers. Your master has died, and the tribe of Yehuda has anointed me as king. And if David succeeds in getting them on his side, so that's an important political victory, because they were Shaul's most loyal men. They risked their lives on behalf of Shaul. But this was not to happen so easily. Avner ben Ner, who was Shaul's chief general, if you recall, every time David tried to make peace with Shaul, Avner ben Ner came up and said, nah, he's faking, he's a faker. The first time when he came with the corner of Shaul's garment, so Avner said, your corner must have gotten torn off on a thorn bush, and he picked it up there. Can't be that he could have killed you and really only cut off the corner. And then the second time, when David came forth with King Saul's flask of water, and he said, where'd you leave it? How come I was able to sneak into your camp and take out the flask that was near the king's head? I could have killed him now. Avner, how could you do such a thing? So Avner told King Saul, he said, must be one of the servants when they went to fetch you water, they forgot your flask by the water. Must be we didn't realize it was left there. And Avner has a source in the Torah that says that from the tribe of Benjamin there would be two kings, and based on that he says there's still one more king left to come from the tribe of Benjamin, and he takes King Saul's younger son, Ishbosheth, and he anoints him as king. And the truth is that Avner is slowly gaining power, and Ishbosheth wasn't such a skilled warrior. Ishbosheth was 40 years old, and he anoints him initially on the eastern side of the Jordan, and then slowly he advances, and he reaches the point where he's king over Gilead, then Ashur, then Yisrael in the north, and then finally Ephraim and Binyamin, and then all of Israel. And Ishbosheth will only be king for 2 years, the tribe of Yehuda, they go after David. And the story we're going to learn now takes place over 7.5 years. David is king in Hebron. He's going to be king another 33.5 years in Jerusalem. That's when the whole kingdom is united under him. So Amner ben Ner takes out the army to Givon. And David's nephew, Yoav, the son of his sister, Tzeruiah, David had a sister named Tzeruiah, and she had three children, Yoav ben Tzeruiah, Avishai ben Tzeruiah, and Asael ben Tzeruiah. Three children, three brothers. And they were David's generals, and so Yoav goes out with his men, and they meet by a pool in Givon. And they're camped there. Each one's on either side of the pool. And Avner says to Yoav, "Let the lads joust before us." And Yoav says, "Okay, if that's what you want, that's what we'll do." And they send 12 representatives. 12 from the tribe of Benjamin, the most faithful to King Saul, his tribe. And 12 from King David's servants. And they jump at one another. Each one grabs the other one's head, and each one draws his sword and kills the other one. And all 24 men drop dead on the spot. And that teaches us something about this war. They weren't focused on defending themselves. They were focused on killing the other. And each one succeeded in killing the other. They all fell dead. And war breaks out. And David's men win. And they have Avner on the run. And Asael, one of the three brothers, he was very swift. And he's chasing after Avner. And Avner sees him and he says, "Is that you, Asael?" And Asael says, "It is I." And Avner says, "Do me a favor. There are a lot of people running next to me. Grab someone else. Go take someone on the right or the left and grab his clothing. Don't keep chasing me." And Asael keeps after Avner. He's the chief general. And Avner says, "Do me a favor, stop chasing me. Why should I kill you? How will I ever be able to face your brother Yoav again?" And Asael refuses. And so Avner sees it as that he has no choice, and he takes the back of his spear, and he sticks it back with great skill as Asael is chasing after him, and he hits him right under the fifth rib, right by the place where the gallbladder and liver are hanging, and he severs them with one shot, and Asael drops dead on the spot. So he was some warrior out there. Asael is being held by death shudders. He's wallowing in his blood there, and all the people who were chasing Avner and his men, when they came to Asael's body, they froze. But Yoav and Avishai, Asael's own brothers, they don't stop. They're chasing after Avner, and the sun sets. And the tribe of Benjamin surrounds around Avner. They're ready to protect him. And Avner calls out to Yoav and he says, "Will we let the sword destroy us forever? Don't you know the end's going to be bitter? Either I'll die or you'll die, but we won't both make it out peacefully. Till when will you continue without telling the nation to stop chasing their own brothers?" And Yoav says, "I swear by Hashem, if you wouldn't have started it all this morning, we could have all left peacefully. I didn't start all of this." And Yoav blows his shofar, and they stop giving chase. Avner is scared that Yoav won't keep his word, so Avner keeps running the whole night. And Yoav is scared that Avner won't keep his word, so Yoav runs the other way all night. And when the sun rises, Yoav is approaching Hebron. In this battle, 360 people were killed from the Avner's people and 20 people from David's camp. And for the next 6.5 years, the next 2 years, we're going to see this war got stronger and more people were deserting the camp of Ishbosheth and joining the camp of David. While David is in Hebron, he has children. And so now David's eldest son is Amnon, and then he has another son who is a brilliant Talmud Chacham named Daniel, and his third son is Avshalom from a wife that was really a non-Jewish woman who became his during war, and his fourth son is Adoniah ben Chagit, And his sixth son, we'll still see, is the son of Michal. We'll see he's going to get his wife Michal back in a minute. So, correct, Shaul's daughter. The tremendous tzaddikus was a little girl when they got married. Avner starts taking on kingly heirs. And he's starting to give everyone the feeling like he's the one who's running the show, and really he is. He's the chief general. And he's really making an ascent to the throne. Now we have a halacha that says that the king's items may not be used by anyone but a fellow king. His scepter, his horse, all his items, and even his wife, when he passes away, although she's a widow, and a Jewish widow is supposed to get remarried, but she's not allowed to remarry just anyone, she must remarry a fellow king. She cannot be married by a, she cannot marry a regular citizen after she was married to the king. She doesn't have to marry a king, she could remain a widow, but she cannot marry a simple citizen. So Shaul had a concubine named Ritzpah Vat Aya. And Avner goes and lives with her. Avner is hereby making a very clear statement that he is king. And Ishbosheth rightfully approaches Avner and says, "Why'd you live with my father's concubine?" And Avner gets upset at Ishbosheth. And he says, "What do you think I am here? But I'm a head of dogs. I'm not the head of the army. I'm not the chief commander here. And after all the kindness I've done for you, I'm the one that's keeping the people under your reign. You think it's so intelligent to start up with me now?" Okay, obviously this was meant to be. This was not an intelligent move on your behalf to start up with me. But obviously God means for the kingdom to go over to David just as he promised him, and that's what I'm going to do. And Ishbosheth can't answer him. So Avner proceeds to do just that. He sends word to David, and he writes a letter. And in that letter, he begins, "From me, the general, Avner, the general of Israel's army, to David, king of Israel, peace." And he proceeds with his own name. He puts his own honor first. And this was an act of defiance. Here he is saying that David is supposed to be king. And in the letter, he begins by stating how great he himself is. So we know of three sins of Avner, possibly four. We know Avner kept the war against David going. He's the one that kept telling Saul, he kept telling Shaul, David's a faker, he couldn't have touched you. We know Avner lived with Ritzpah Bat Aya. We know Avner is treating David irrespectfully. And then we have a questionable act of the killing of Asahel at war. And we'll see why that is questionable in a minute. So Avner sends word to David and he says, "We all know that you should be king over the earth. Make a treaty with me. I want to come join you and bring all of Israel to be under your dominion." And David says, "Fine, I'll make with you a treaty, but there's one thing I want of you. And don't come see me before you bring me my wife, Michal, the daughter of Shaul. Send her here before you come see me." David sends word to Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth is the king. But we haven't seen any indication that Ishbosheth wanted war with David. Avner led the war. And we're going to see that later on David is going to call Ishbosheth a big tzaddik. And David says, "Give me my wife Michal that I engaged with 100 Philistine foreskins." And Ishbosheth does that. He sends him his wife. So you ask yourself, your brother-in-law is competing with you to the throne. Why do you send him the king's daughter? That gives him a greater claim to the throne. So, okay. So at first glance, it's a very good question. At first glance, it seems Ishbosheth is a big tzaddik. We have to notice what Ephraim correctly pointed out. David says, "Give me my wife Michal that I engaged with 100 Philistine foreskins." It is correct that King Saul said, whoever, that if David brings him 100 foreskins, he will be able to marry his daughter Michal. But it is also correct that David actually came forth with 200 foreskins to engage King Saul's daughter Michal. So why does he say 100 foreskins? So the simple understanding is that David was saying, your father offered her to me for 100, and that's what I engaged her with. The deeper understanding is that Shaul held that David was not engaged to Michal. Remember the halachic dispute between David and Shaul. If a person engages a woman, and she owes him $1 million, and he gives her 2 cents, he gives her 100 foreskins, he gives her dog food. So he's getting engaged to her, and he's going to forgo the money she owes him, plus he's giving her $1 worth of dog food. With which one does he plan on engaging her? King Saul held that his focus is on the $1 million, and you cannot engage a woman with the money that's on a loan. You have to engage with something tangible. And that's why King Saul held that David was never really married to his daughter Michal. And that's why he gave her away to someone else. David said, that's not the halacha. I meant to engage her with the foreskins. I knew I wasn't engaging her with the loan that you owed me. And so that's what David is restating here. He's saying, her father said I'm going to engage her with 100 foreskins. I engaged her with those 100. It's true I gave 200. But I engaged her with 100. You ask me, what can you do with 100 foreskins? It's dog food. It's got the minimum value necessary to engage a woman. And that's what I engaged her with. And that's why halachically she's mine. I never had in mind to engage her with anything else. I gave the foreskins like your father asked, and she's legally mine, and give her back. But there's also another meaning here. David is saying to Ishbosheth, 100 Philistines are already lost their foreskin over this woman. You better not stand in my way. He doesn't say it, but he does say it. He says, you know, I already took off 100 foreskins for her, and now give her back. There's an underlying meaning here. So Ishbosheth sends her back. He sends word to Paltiel ben Laish, probably one of the most fantastic Jews that ever lived in Jewish history. A man who had this little girl, the king tells him to marry her, and he puts a sword between his bed and hers, and for years there's a sword in between the beds, and he brings her up like she's his daughter, and he tells her, anyone that comes near the other one is getting hit with this. There's no hanky-panky going on here. And for years he brings her up like his own daughter, but he doesn't touch her. And when he brings her back to give her to her husband, he walks behind her weeping. What a mitzvah he's lived up to all these years. He's brought up this girl. And Avner says, go back. And so he does. Avner gathers the elders and he says, you always wanted David as king over you. And now it's time to do it. Because Hashem said that David would save the Jewish people from the Philistines and all their enemies. And he tells the tribe of Benjamin too. And he tells David, the people of Israel and even the house of Benjamin want you as king. He comes with 20 men and David makes a party for him. And Avner tells David, let me gather the people and they'll make a covenant with you and you'll be king wherever you want. And David sends Avner in peace. Now, just after they leave, Yoav and his men come back from a tremendous battle. They just battled a great battalion. They have a tremendous amount of loot. And although they conquered the whole battalion, they didn't lose anyone. Avner is David's chief general, and Avner's own brother was killed by Yoav. I'm sorry, Yoav is David's chief general, and Yoav's brother was killed by Avner. And Yoav wasn't around when Avner made this peace treaty with David. So Yoav comes back, and he gets word that Avner ben Ner was here. He met with the king, and the king sent him off in peace. Yoav comes to his uncle, King David, and he says, what'd you do? Avner came here, why'd you let him go? You know Avner, he came to seduce you. He wants to know exactly where you are, exactly what you're up to, so that he could attack. Yoav leaves, and he sends word to Avner, the king wants to ask you something, he forgot something. And they bring Avner back from Bo Hasira, the pit of the thorn. Our sages say there was no pit of a thorn. He was brought back because of those two sins. Because he said you left your flask in the pit, your coat got caught on a thorn. That's why he was brought back. And David doesn't know that all of this is taking place. Avner comes back and Yoav tilts him into the gate to talk to him about the Sheli. What's the gate to talk about the Sheli? So, Chazal have a tradition that the gate is talking about the gate of the courts. Our courts used to stay by the gates where people would enter and leave. If they had a case, they'd bring it to there. And Sheli, our sages say, one understanding is in peace. Another understanding is a surprise attack. And a third understanding is he asked him about Sheli. Sheli comes from the word shal, the removal of a shoe. He said to him, you know, there's a halacha we need to ask you about. If a woman has no hands, and she's married, and her first husband dies without children, and then the brother doesn't want to marry her, so there is a concept of chalitza, the removal of a shoe, that the woman must do to show this brother does not want to continue the family line. He does not want to marry me. Well, if she has no hands, how does she take off her brother's shoe? So Avner says, with her mouth. So Yoav says, show me what he means. Avner bends down with his mouth, and when he's down with his mouth, Yoav kills him. But we have a tradition that Yoav took him to court. And that's what it means, he took him to the gate. And when he took him to court, he said, why'd you kill my brother? And Avner said, he was chasing me, he wanted to kill me. And Yoav says, why didn't you wound him? You're telling me he was a rodev. You're telling me the halacha says if someone's trying to kill you, you could kill him first. Well, that's true if you have no choice. Why didn't you maim him? Why didn't you hit him in the leg? So Yoav Avner says, I couldn't. He was chasing after me. It was war. Yoav says, you could aim to hit the fifth rib. You could hit him exactly at the point where he drops dead on the spot, but you can't maim him. That you couldn't hit. And the court side with Yoav. And so Yoav and his brother kill him. He hits him in that fifth rib. So Avner is dead. And the pasuk stresses that Yoav killed him over his brother. Meaning, here Yoav was telling David, he's a liar, he's a cheat, he's here just to turn his back on you, he wanted to figure out where you were hiding. The pasuk attests that wasn't true. Even Yoav didn't think that was true. Yoav killed him because he killed Yoav's brother. Yoav was avenging his brother. And David hears this, and David says, me and my kingdom are clean from Hashem for eternity, from the blood of Avner ben Ner. Let it fall on Yoav's head and his family's head, and let there never cease from Yoav's house a zav, a man who has some kind of gonorrhea, some kind of disease, a metzora, some kind of leprosy, machzik bepelech, a person who is leaning on a stick, who is some kind of cripple, nofel bacherev, people killed by the sword, v'chasar lacham, an impoverished people. So he curses his nephew with such a terrible curse. And all this curse is going to come back to haunt King David, because when it comes time to execute Yoav, Yoav will refuse to leave the temple. And it is David's own son, Shlomo, who will be having the conversation with Yoav through a messenger. But Yoav says, I'm not leaving here to get killed by you after all the curses your father gave me. Either you take the curses on yourself and then you could execute me for what I did wrong, or leave me with the curses and don't kill me. And Shlomo says, fine. And when Shlomo says, fine, all these curses that David put on Yoav were accepted back on his own home by King Solomon, and our sages point out where all of them came true. Every one of these curses ended up falling on David because David's son, Shlomo, accepted them. David tells Yoav and he tells everyone, you guys tear your clothing, you wear sackcloth, you start eulogizing. Yoav, at least make believe you regret what you did. He tells Yoav to eulogize Avner. Yoav just killed him. David says, yeah, at least fake that you regret it. And David walks before the coffin. And they take Avner to be buried in Hebron, and David starts weeping, and he weeps over Avner's grave. And he eulogizes over him and he says, how does he fall like a derelict His hands weren't bound. His feet weren't bound. How is it that such pitiful people, such sinful people killed him? And everyone weeps. And David swears, I'm not going to eat today. David weeps. And he walks before the bed and behind the bed. And he's trying to convince the men and the women and everyone that he is really sorry over Avner's death. He had nothing to do with it. And he has to convince them of that. Because at this moment, there is tremendous danger that the kingdom will again be plagued with civil strife. If people think that they cannot make up with David, that here Avner tried to make up with him and he was killed, so then what chances do they have of making up with David? Then no one's going to switch sides. So David realizes the political danger here. There's a threat to the unity of the nation. Here, unity was within grasp. And when Yoav killed Avner, he killed it. So David has to convince the nation that he had no hand in it. And that's what he does. He's weeping vehemently, more so to convince the nation probably than because he really cared so much for Avner. And he succeeds. The nation realizes that he had no hand in it. And that becomes clear to everyone. And David says to his own men, he says, I want you to know a great leader fell today among Israel, and I'm still a fresh young king. These people, the sons of my sister Tsruya, are tougher than I am, but let Hashem pay back the evildoer like his evil doings. He leaves it to the hands of Hashem. And here we see a similar occurrence happened. Ishbosheth wasn't powerful enough to stand up to Avner. And by the same token, David wasn't powerful enough to stand up to his chief generals, to Yoav and Avishai, his brothers. And we'll pick up Ezachim next week with the continuation of the story. What happens when Ishbosheth hears that Avner is dead, and how the kingdom is finally united under David.